Okay, we're beginning here from the Mishnah on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Bet. Amar Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav. Ha-ma'on hazeh, which is a Lashon Shvu'ah, ma'on referring to the Mikdash, right, in the name of the Mikdash, I take a Shvu'ah, lo zazo yada mitoch yadi, mishah shenichnesu obdei kochavim liYerushalayim, that my wife was with me the entire time that the non-Jews had breached the walls of Yerushalayim and attacked Yerushalayim, until they left, that he was basically testifying that she had never been in captivity or taken by the non-Jews. But nevertheless, Amrulo and Adam Me'id al Atzmo. Person can't testify about himself. He's no Geba Devar, it's his wife. And he can't testify to the fact that she was under his auspices the entire time that they were inside Yerushalayim. The assumption is that any woman inside of Yerushalayim was problematic, unless they had evidence to the contrary, because of what had transpired there. Tana, Vafal Pikein, despite all of this, I mean, despite all of this, which means that he's not allowed to be married to her anymore, as Rashi notes, because he was a Kohen, and therefore she was no longer muteret to him based on this chashash. Ichada bayit b'chatzero. He made a special location in his chatzer, in his courtyard for her, a house for her. She yotza, yotza b'rosh b'neha. When she left the area, she left in front of all of her kids. And when she came back in, she came in after her kids. This was to prevent the problem of yichud. So that when she left, she leaves while there's still children, while there's still individuals in the chatzer, and therefore they're not isolated. And the same on the return. When she came back, the children went in first, and then she came in afterwards, meaning that they never were biyichud. So he kept her as a wife, basically without having her act as a wife, in that sense that they were never mityached, they were never alone together. He believed that she was tohura, he believed that she could remain with him, but he respected the psak halacha of the chachamim, and based on that, he was never mityached ita, but he kept her in his chatzir and kept her as a wife in that way. Abayi now queries, ma'ud asot begrushakein, what happens to a person who divorces a woman, can he do the same setup? This setup basically allows a person to live with a woman in the same chatzer, but it prevents the problems that are associated with yichud, which is the issue that some, maybe they will have biyah, maybe they'll get together. So how do you prevent that? You don't have any yichud. So that stops the problem. So can you do the same thing by a grusha, a couple that is divorced? Can you do that same thing like he just did with his wife when she was a shvuya? Mar says, "Hotam hu debishvuya hekilu." Over there, they let him do it because, in truth, the whole problem of shvuyah is only a chashash. It's only something that we worry about. We don't know definitively that something happened to her. And it's a chashash. And mitzad chashash, we're not going to force him to completely divorce her in the sense that she can't live there, she can't be together. If he sets it up in this framework where there won't be any yichud, we'll let him to do it. Aval hachalo, by girushin, we won't do this. Odim aloshna, or maybe it makes no difference. Either grusha, shvuya. If the whole problem is yichud, we can prevent it in this case. Tashma, Titania, we have a bright magresha tishto, lo tinase bishchunato. If a man divorces a woman, she should not marry someone in his neighborhood, in his area, because we know this from other places, Rashi notes it here as well. Mekira, birimizotav, ekritzotav. They know each other. They know how to wink at each other in their different ways. And there's a high likelihood that something untoward will happen if we allow them to stay in a very close proximity, even when she gets married again. V'imaya kohen, lo tidori mo b'mavoy. And if he's a kohen, now the kohen aspect here is even if she didn't get married again. Because once a kohen divorces his wife, he can't remarry the woman because now she's a grusha. So here in the instance where it's a kohen, lo tidori mo b'mavoy, he cannot even be in the mavui with him. So Tosafot over here says, why is it by the Kohen that she can't be in the mavui? The kevin de pnuyahi, since she is single, kile, then there's less of an isur that will mitigate his desire to get back together with her. Avalim niseit, if she's already married to a third party, ain't zarich l'archik, ela kadesh chuna. Then he only has to distance her, kadesh chuna, dainu gimu batim, which is three houses. What you see here from Tosafot is very clear, that he thinks that Shchuna is smaller than Mavui. That's not obvious in the Gemara, but Tosafot clearly believes that Shchuna is a small area, which involves a Chatzer with three houses in it. A mauvoy is like a small road, a small cul-de-sac that has multiple houses or chatzerot that are on it. So here, where she is married, and there's a significant isur associated with ish et ish, in that case, he only has to distance her. Don't live in the same shkuna. Don't live in a very, very close proximity. But if already you're a little separated, that's enough. The other hand, by the Kohen, where there she's single, and there's really no isur, there's only an isur lav for him to take her back, which is makzir grushato. So in that case, we would say distance her even more, because we're afraid that he's going to violate a lighter isur rather than a bigger isur. So we say distance her more because there's less of a mitigating factor in the isur that's associated with it. Obviously, you could see there are Rishonim that do just the opposite, the Rambam. The Rambam thinks just the opposite. The bigger the isur, the further away she's got to be, because then the risk is much higher, not because the risk of him doing something with her, but the risk of the violation is much higher. So therefore, in that case, he thinks that a shchuna is bigger than a mavoi. And that means when she marries another party, you got to separate way away from each other. If it's a kohen with the pnuya, then you only have to separate the distance of a mavoi. So the difference is, what risk are we worried about here? Tosafot says that the risk that we're worried about over here is simply the likelihood that the individual will engage with this woman. The lower the yisur, the higher the likelihood. So the greater the risk, that's what we're going to separate further. But Rambam says the risk that we're trying to measure over here is seriousness of the violation. And therefore, the more serious the violation, the more distance you're going to have to put here. And that will explain the difference in their opinions between shchuna and mavui. Now, imayak far katan, it's a small village, zeamayamase, it was an incident like this, v'amruk far katan nidon kishchuna is one girsa, and you can see the Bach changes it to mavui. It will depend on which one you think is bigger or smaller. If you think that the shchuna is smaller, then you'll have a girsa that says mavui. If you think that the mavui is smaller, then you're going to say a shchuna. Either way. Tosafot says something interesting. Here he says dafka kfar katan. Kfar benuni lo. That's only a really small village. But a middle-sized village, that's not the case. Which is hard because you're dealing with amorphous terms. Small village, medium-sized village. They're not giving real definitions to the sizes over here. From Erevin, you have a definition of Mavoy. Tosafot says here, Shchuna is just three houses that are around the Chatzer. There he gave definitions to it. No, just the basic idea is the more people that are there, the less likelihood we have a problem. The more private the area is, the more likelihood you have a problem. The more houses that are present, the less private it is, the less likely is that we'll have a problem. But over here with Kfar Katan and Kfar Benoni, it's hard to know what the reference is to. What's considered to be a small village and what's a middle-sized village. It's not clear. Mi nidche mipnei mi. Who gets knocked off or moved because of the other party? Over here we're saying they're not allowed to live in this close proximity. If you're not allowed to live in close proximity, somebody's got to move. Who's moving? Tashma, detanya, hi nidcheit mipanav. Venu nidche mipanea. So she gets moved because of him and not him because of her. So if she marries someone in the local shkuna, she's got to move out of the shkuna. He doesn't have to move out of the shkuna. She's got to move. If it's her courtyard, if it's her area, then who nidche mipanea? Then he's got to move. So the simple view of what is transpiring here is the ownership. He owns the house here. He owns the chatzir that he's in. She marries someone else who's here. She's got to move out and not him because this is his house. This is his location. On the other hand, if the house that they lived in, the chatzir they lived in, really belonged to her, then at this point, he's got to move because he really doesn't have any vested interest in the chatzir in this neighborhood, and he's got to move. Ibailu, aita chatzir shel shneihem. Mau. If they both have ownership here, what is the din? Tashma, he nidcheit mipanav. She gets knocked off or moved because of him. B'maya skinan. What's the case there? Ilama b'chatzir shelo. If it's his chatzir, pshita that she's got to move because it's his chatzir. Of course, she's got to move out. Vela b'chatzir shela. If it's her chatzir, v'atanya mi aita chatzir shela hu nidche mipanav. If it's her chatzir, then certainly he's got to move because we have the braita that said that he's out if it's her chatzir. Elav ki ay gavna. Must be that the case where we said that he doesn't have to move and she does have to move must be a case where they both own the chatzir. And that's the chiddush. It's teaching us that in that case she has to move. Where it says, no, duma agir megar. Maybe it's a case where he's renting in the area. And that's the case where we say she's got to move. Even though technically he doesn't own the land, But since he's renting here, this is establishes his residence. And his residence is Koveya, and she's got to move. So my Havialo, okay, the Gemara says, that's not, we have no definitive proof here as to what to do when they both own in this neighborhood. So the Gemara says, Tashma, Hinei Hashem mital telcha tal tela gaver, that Hashem is going to carry you around or disperse you like that of a man being carried around or dispersed. So the fact that the Navi uses as a mashal the movement of a man shows you that that's considered to be something very negative or very difficult. And therefore, over here also, if we have to make a decision about who should move, maybe when the situation is equal, again, when she owns the chaser, it's clear that he's moving. If he owns the chaser, it's clear that she's moving. When they both own it here, it's not clear who should move. Then we have to make a decision about which one should take precedence. From here you see from the pasuk that the movement of a man is far more difficult than that of a woman. Could be for different reasons. One is that people are merachim on a woman more than a man. And therefore, if a woman is in a situation where she's floating around or in a difficult predicament, people will take her in. People will take care of her. For a man, they'll be less likely to take care of him. That's one possibility. The other possibility is just the nature of things, especially in their day, where the woman moved to the man's house or to the man's location. So the man really established residence, or he was the one who was local, and the woman, whoever she married, came to him. If we make the man move, you're upending his whole world by making him move. The woman's going to move anyway when she gets married again, or if she did get married, she's going to move. It's less of a dramatic or difficult for the woman to have to move than for the man to move. And because of that issue, when all the other things are equal, we're going to opt for the woman moving and not the man moving. They have to separate. That's what we're saying over here. So if we have to impose on someone to separate, we're going to impose on the one who it's less of a burden or less of a difficulty, trauma for. Tan Rabbanan, lavahemena b'nichse avia. If he borrowed money from her, she had nichse malog, she brought in possessions into the marriage, and then he borrowed money against that property. Eina nifrat al yedei acher. When she wants to collect the money, she wants to interact on a business basis with him, she's got to send a third party in there. We don't want her going in all alone to collect the money because of the same problem of them living together. We don't want yichud taking place after the fact. Amrav Sheshes, v'yi atu l'kaman l'dina, lo minizdaka ginen l'hu. If they come to us to adjudicate a business transaction between them, we will not address that. Because, as Rashi says, the eker fact that they got involved in a business transaction is already a bad news. They should not be interacting on such an intimate level. When we want separation, we want complete separation. We don't want them somewhat separated and then interacting and putting themselves in a predicament where it could lead to negative things. Not only do we not address them when they come to adjudicate, we put them into shamto, into excommunication. Not only do we, this is according to the Girsa that Tosafot views as being proper here, that not only do we excommunicate them, we also give them malkot. Obviously, you could see Rabbi Yehuda ben Yeshua being as an alternative of giving malkot instead of putting them into excommunication. But Tosafot rejects that because he says in other places we see that malkot are a lighter form of punishment than excommunication. And therefore, why would it be that Rabbi Yehuda ben Yeshua is offering them a lesser alternative? It seemingly, according to here, it looks like each one is getting more chamur than the next, that the Rabbeinu Tam is saying that you're getting more and more chamur as you move along. Therefore, Rav Huna b'Rabbi Yeshua is additive, not an alternative. And that's why he says, Negudei Nami Minagdinan Lei. And the word Nami, you can see the Bach takes it out. That will depend on how you view this. If you view it as Nami, like Tosafot, which means that it's additive, then the word Nami belongs there. If you think that this is an alternative, unlike the Tosafot, then you would take out the word Nami. And you can see that alternative Girsa in the Bach. Amar Rav Nachman. Tana be'evel rabati. We have a brayta in evel rabati. Evel rabati is masechet smachot, as Rashi points out over here. It's something that deals with all the issues of death, and it aggregates large numbers of braytot. It's known as one of the masechetot ktanot that they print at the end of Seder Nezikin. Over there we have numerous masechetot ktanot. One of them is masechet smachot. Why it's called evel rabati instead of what the classic way that we identify Masechtot, which is by the first word in the Masechta. That's how we generally identify the Masechta or the Mishnah that we're trying to, or the Perek that we're trying to speak about. Over here, the Ritva suggests that that's not the case here because it begins with Hagoses. So they didn't want to know it as a Masechet or Perek Hagoses, so they called it Evel Rabati, and later on it became known as Masechet Smachot and Lashon Sagi Nahor in a way to make a euphemism of Masechet Smachot. So Bamed Dvarim Amurim, what is the case here? Vishnit Garshamin in Nisuim. That's only if they divorced from marriage. Aval kishnit garshamin eirusin. If they divorced from a halakhic engagement, nifrat ayidei atzma. Then she can collect the money and they can interact even by herself. Shein libo gaspa. Because they don't have a deep enough relationship where we worry about what's going to transpire here. In the case where they're already married, they have an existing relationship, they have certain amount of comfort with each other. Therefore, we don't want them interacting in this manner, because if they interact in this manner, then something bad could happen, or something will happen. On the other hand, when it's just from Arusa Rusa, they never were close enough. They never had an existing relationship where we're worried about it going back to that relationship. The relationship before was never so close. So it's never going to get, even if we allow them to interact now, it's never going to go back to that. How Arus, Varusato, Datu the Kameh Derava. There was an engaged couple that came before Rava. Yativ Rav Adar Bar Matna Kamei, Uki Rava Shlucha Bentayu. So Rav Adar Bar Matna was there, and Rava set up a shliach between them. He set up someone to work between them, meaning that he didn't allow them to interact directly, seemingly because of the problem here that we're worried about after they get divorced. We don't want them interacting in this situation. Rashi points out it's a case where they were Kohen Hayah. He was a Kohen, and therefore, if they got divorced, they weren't allowed to get back together. So we wanted to maintain a certain amount of separateness between them. So Rava set up an intermediary between them. Amalei Rav Adar Bar Matna, Amar Rav Nachman. Don't we have Rav Nachman, Tana, Evel, Beva, Rabati? He brought the Braita from Evel, Rabati, that in the case of Arus, Varusato, you don't have to worry about that. Amalei, Kachazin, and the Kagaisi, Behadadi. I saw that they were a little too comfortable with each other. That, yes, in general, we can assume that Arus and Arusa do not have much comfort with each other, and therefore they can't interact directly, but there will always be exceptions to the case, or exceptions to the rule. In this case, I saw that they were very comfortable with each other, and because they were comfortable with each other, therefore I wanted to set up an intermediary and not allow them to interact directly. Ikedamre, that this was the story, some say, Lo'uki Rabba Shliach Ben Tayu, that Rava didn't set up. He allowed them to interact directly. Amalei Rav Adar Bar Matna, Nikum Mar Shlucho Ben Tayu. Why don't you set up an intermediary between them? Amalei V'hamar Rav Nachman, Tana Bevo Raboti. So then Rava responds to him and says, wait a minute, why should I set up an intermediary? We have the Braita from Evel Raboti that says, Arus Varusato, don't have to do that. So Amalei Rav Adar Bar Matna says back to him, Hanim Yichayich Adolo Gaisi Ba'adodi. That's only true when they are not very close or comfortable with each other. But over here, we clearly see these are way too comfortable with each other. Rashi over here, it's interesting, he brings the makirim zeh zebir mizot ukitzot blaz, says privits. Some sort of like privy or private. And that they have a certain comfort or private interaction that is only between them. And that comfort is a danger to them getting back together. And therefore, we're not going to allow it to interact in a direct manner, because that could lead to things that we don't want. Especially here where it's a Kohen who divorced the woman. We don't want them getting back together because that's an Isur Lav for them. Right now, next Mishnah. This is the list of individuals who are allowed to testify when they get older as to what they saw when they were minors. Person is believed to say, this is my father's handwriting. V'zektav yado shel Rabbi. This is the handwriting of my Rebbe. V'zektav yado shel Achi. This is also the handwriting of my brother. Zachor ha'iti b'plonit. She'atza b'hinuma v'rosha parua. I remember the wedding of so-and-so, and she clearly went out with her hinuma, however we define that. Let's assume it's a veil. And her hair was uncovered, indicating that it was a marriage of a bitula. V'sheya ish ploni yotze mi beit ha'sefer litbo. I remember my buddy over here, he used to be taken out of school to go to the mikveh in order to eat shuma. Or if he's a Kohen, he can say, I remember so-and-so showing up with us to divide the shuma by the goin, by the threshing floors. Makom hazeh beit pras. This location here is considered to be a beit pras. Vad kan ayinu bain b'Shabbat. Until here, we used to come on Shabbat. I mean, this is the end of Tchum Shabbat. Aval ein adam ne'eman lomar. Person is not believed to say, derech haya l'ploni b'makom hazeh, that this individual had rights to cross through here, basically an easement to cross through this land. V'mamad v'mispid haya l'ploni b'makom hazeh. Or, this is the way to his personal cemetery or graveyard, and he had rights to set up a mispeid, to set up eulogies and mamadot for the avel in this location. The reason being that these latter two things are monetary issues, and in monetary issues, the fact that he remembers what happened when he's a katan, we're not going to allow to impact. In the other case, in every other issue here, the Gemara is going to discuss this, we're talking about issues dirabanan, and since these are issues dirabanan, we're going to believe the individual with regards to issues dirabanan when he is of age, if he remembers something that when he was a katan. Because I remember back to the day where I remember my father's handwriting from when I was a young kid, and we will believe him based on that. Amar Rav Huna b'Rei de Rabbi Yeshua. So Rav Huna b'Rei de Rabbi Yeshua comes and qualifies the statement in the Mishnah and says, "V'hu sheyesh gadol imo." That's only if there's a second aid that is a gadol that comes with him. Now, that qualification, the Rishonim argue about on what part of the Mishnah is that qualification. There's some suggest that it's on everything in the Mishnah. Anything in the Mishnah, we say the Katan is believed. That's only if he's mitzareif with a gadol, then we believe him. Others suggest that it's only about the first items in the Mishnah, which is the kiyum shtarot. When it comes to the kiyum shtarot, which is a more serious issue in terms of being monetary impact, then over there we're going to suggest that there they need an extra gadol along with them in order to create a testimony that has validity. And others suggest that anything that has to do with the first section of the Mishnah, those require gadol imo. Isur, like truma and so forth, that does require gadol imo. So again, you have three different approaches in the Rishonim to what it means of yeshesh gadol imo. Then Gemara says v'tzricha. We need all the cases in the Mishnah. Diyash minin aviv. If you just told me that he's allowed to testify about his father's signature, midashim d'shchiach gabei, because the child spends a lot of time with his father, we'd assume that he knows his father's signature. Avar rabolo. But if it's his rebbe, no. When it comes to his Rebbe, he's very fearful of his Rebbe. I don't know how to exactly qualify that. Does that mean that he pays more attention to what his Rebbe does because he has fear of his Rebbe? Or imta d'rabbe means that he's not going to make a mistake about something about his Rebbe. He won't be just in estimation or assume something because of the fear of his Rebbe. But whatever that factor is, that maybe there's something about his Rebbe that's unique. Aval aviv lo, but his father not. V'yishminin anei tarte, if you told me his father and his Rebbe, aviv d'shchiach kabei rabo ditle emte, because by his father that he's found there often, and with his Rebbe he has the fear. Aval achiv, delay lo ha v'lo ha, maybe by his brother where he has neither of these, emelo, he wouldn't believe him. Kamash v'lan, that we do believe him. Now, kamash v'lan, it's not clear what the kamash v'lan is. Is the kamash v'lan here that we believe him by his brother? Or does that mean kamash v'lan, we believe him by anybody? I mean, brother is an indication for any party besides the father and the Rebbe. Or is brother still someone who's a karov? And therefore he has more credence by a karov because people spend more time with their relatives. Therefore the katan has more value. So again, that's not clear from the kamash v'lan. And the kamash v'lan is kevan de kiyum shtarot midrabanan, himnu rabanan midrabanan. So since kiyum shtarot is only midrabanan, midoraita, you do not need a kiyum shtarot, as Rashi notes over here. That midoraita lo bein in kiyum, damarish lakish, edim achatumim alashkar, nesekimish nechrai dutam bebeitin. When edim are signed on a contract, it's as if they were vetted in beitin, and they are granted the rights to make this document or give this document validity. So the fact that it's only the Rabbanan can basically set the rules by which kiyum shtarot takes place, and one of those rules is that a katan is believed in this instance. Tosfot takes this issue up from two perspectives. One perspective is, what does that mean that a katan is believed over here? Im himnu rabbanan bidrabbanan, why do we have to wait till he's a gadol? Why can't we believe him as a minor? Right? Minyana diyoma. By Pesach, we say, the Gemara says over there that bidikat chametz is midrabbanan. And therefore, himnu rabbanan bidrabbanan. The rabbanan believed isha katan eved by bidikat chametz because that's a dindrabbanan. Over there, when they believe him, it's a katan himself that they believe. They don't want to wait for him to become a gadol. Even when he's a katan, they believe him. So Tosafot over here says that the difference is biyado la'asot. That in the case where he has the ability to do it himself, over there he gets nemanut even when he's a katan. Because when he says the house was baduk, he could have checked it himself. Meaning that bedikat chametz is something that he has control over. Over here, when he's testifying about the handwriting, it's something that he can do. He's testifying about an issue. So therefore, we want him to be a gadol. That's one possibility. The other possibility is here that kiyum shtarot, when he testifies about the edut here, we're talking about something that has real impact in terms of monetary matters, even though it's a derabanan. Over there, we want him to be a gadol, so he doesn't say, yeah, I think I remember. We want him to understand the implications of what he is saying. But bitikat chametz, it's all a harchoka midrabanan. That harchoka midrabanan, okay, if he's a katan, we're going to believe him as a katan. We're fine with believing him in that instance. A Tosafot takes issue with that afterwards because he says, if it's really biyado lasot, then we even believe people by doraita, like a woman is believed in being mafrish trumot, in kashrut in the house. When you're talking about nemanut, there nemanut is even doraita when you talk about they have the ability to do it. So therefore, a Tosafot invokes the Yushalmi that is mentioned by the Gemara Pesachim that Nashim Atzlaniyotim, and since it's a big burden to do Bigah Chametz, therefore the woman's just going to say, yeah, it's done, it's done. Over there, Chiddush is that if it was not B'dikat Chametz Midrabanan, we wouldn't have believed anybody over there. B'dikat Chametz Midrabanan opens up that possibility of B'yado Lasot that they're believed. Even though Doraita, normally they would believe B'yado Lasot, over there you would have a Havamina not to believe them because B'dikat Chametz takes a big effort. And therefore maybe we shouldn't believe anybody over there. The answer in the end is, because it's derabanan, we believed everybody. Over here, we're dealing with a different issue. It's not biyado lasot, it's a din derabanan. We're only going to believe you once you come of age. The other thing that Tosafot raises over here is a very interesting question. He says, if kiyum shtarot is only midorabanan, midoraita, you don't need kiyum shtarot, then what exactly happens midoraita? Anybody who shows up with a document with two witnesses showed on it, he can collect money? He can do whatever he wants with it? He says you're going to have a huge business in forgeries then. People are just going to write documents, sign the documents, and say, ah, midoraita would have been fine. Without this institution, the Rabbanon, you would have had a huge issue. How could it be that the Torah allows for that to happen? So Tosafot says that it must be that midrabanan, they added in kiyum shtarot in all cases. But midoraita, you would still at least have to have some sort of verification. We wouldn't have to know who the edim were, but we'd at least have to have maybe another document with their signature on it, or two documents with the signature on it. We have to be able to verify that this is a signature that has been known to be used around, but not that it is a forgery that is being used. And then the other possibility does what it says is a case where the loveh is modeh, a case where the borrower agrees. So loveh modeh, so maybe you would think that loveh modeh needs a kiyum shtarot. We had an opinion like that earlier. So midoraita, you wouldn't need the loveh to have the kiyum shtarot, but midrabanan, we require kiyum shtarot even when the loveh is modeh, even when the borrower agrees to the document. We still require kiyum shtarot. So those are cases by doraita. We won't have problems of ziyuf of forgeries. And that would be the cases where we believe them doraita. But again, Tosafot comes up with different scenarios in which the doraita would not be far-fetched to say that you don't need kiyum shtarot and the signatures would suffice over here. Why is he believed over there by the case of the woman who's getting married that she's a b'tula? Because came the rov nashim b'tulot nis'ot gilui miltu ba'almahu. Since most women, the majority of women who are getting married are bitulot, then when he is testifying over here, it's not a real edut, but rather something that just needs to be identified that she was part of the rov. As a Rashi says, "Komar ena davar tzrich edut, ufasim she'adzan doyin below gumum." We just need to know that she was part of the rov and not part of the minority. So all he needs to do is finger her to the rov side, and rov is what's koveya over here. It's not his edut that's koveya. He's just simply identifying that she's part of the rove and not part of the minority. And that's a katan can do, or someone he goes up can do and speak about when he was, when a katan. Maybe he is not a kohen, but he's the servant of a kohen. Servants of the kohanim also eat truma. How do you know the reason that he ate truma was because he's a kohen? Maybe he's eating truma over here because he's an eved, because he's a servant. Misayile the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. This supports or helps out the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Dama Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, asur la'adam, shilamedet abdo Torah. Person's not allowed to teach his servant Torah. Because otherwise, the possibility is that the eved would be in school. Now that we're talking about a child being in school, then what they're saying from this is clearly he's not an Eved. Because an Eved doesn't go to school. Only children go to school, not the Avadim. So that supports Rabbi Shub ben Levi's contention that we don't teach the Avadim in Torah. Velo, Atanya Lava Hemenu, Rabo. O Shaso Rabo Apotropus. If his master borrowed money from him, or he made him the executor of the estate, O Shaniach Tfilin Bifne Rabo, or he puts on tefillin in front of his master, O Shakarash Loshap Sukim Bebeit HaKnesset. He was called up for an aliyah, and he read the Torah in front of his Rebbe. Harizelo Yatzal Lechirut. There he doesn't automatically go out to freedom. These are all items that only a free man would be entitled to do. They are things that would not be respectful or wouldn't really transpire unless you thought the Eved was freed. A person doesn't borrow money from a servant. A person borrows money from other free men. A servant is not made the executor of an estate. And he works on the estate. He doesn't become the executor of the estate. Or if he's putting on tefillin or going getting an aliyah in front of his Rebbe and he doesn't say anything, it sounds like he's free. He must be free. That's a case where he learned how to read by himself. So there, that braita is not a braita where he went to school to learn how to read. How does he know how to read the Torah unless he went to school? The answer is not. He didn't go to school. He taught himself to read. He learned from osmosis. He didn't go to school to learn how to read. Our case over here is he's treating him like a son. Treating him like a son is that he sends him off to school, like his children, to go learn in the regular academies. That's not the case. You don't do that by an Eved. The fact that an Eved could know this information, or an Eved does have the ability to be literate, that's not necessarily indication or evidence of the fact that he was educated by his master. He could have learned. He could be a very smart individual, and he's able to pick it up. But that doesn't mean that he was formally educated. What we're talking about here, or Rabbi Shulman Levi's statement, is that we don't formally educate Avadim. And since we don't formally educate Avadim, we don't worry about the fact that he is an Eved Kohen. We don't worry about the fact that he's now found here in the school and going out to eat truma, not because he's a free person, but simply because he is an Eved Kohen. Now, this has a broader implication, which is, do we worry about this concept of Eved Kohen in general? Here the Gemara asks about it, but it does not ask about it in a lot of other places where an Eved Kohen goes and collects truma or gets truma. How come we don't ask about it? Why don't we worry about the fact that one day he'll be freed, and once he's freed, he's not entitled anymore to truma? So why don't we worry about that scenario? Tosafot says over here, Vishlamar, Delosh Shchicha Kulihai Shishel Truma Achar Shishtachrer. An Eved will not go back and ask for truma after he is freed. Lo b'torat Eved, v'lo b'torat Kohen. Not as an Eved, not as a Kohen. Ki yarei pen yibduku. They won't check him out. V'yibarer shu Eved. They're going to figure out that he's really an Eved. V'yotzi olav kol abdut. I mean that there's too much risk for this guy to go back and try to collect truma, because he can't collect truma as a Kohen because he's not a Kohen. He can only collect truma as an Eved of a Kohen. Now as an Eved of Kohen, he's not a free man anymore. For him as a free man to place himself in a predicament where they might think he's an Eved, or they might start calling him an Eved again, it's just not worth it to him. His freedom is worth so much to him that he's not going to place himself in that predicament. And we also do not worry about the fact that his master might sell him to a Yisrael, might sell him to a Yisrael, and then he won't be entitled to Truma anymore, and then even as an Eved. Because, in that instance, who's responsible for his mizonot? His master. He's not going to go lie to collect Truma to save his master money, because it's not his obligation to get the food. He's not going to sin to help out his master. What about the fact that maybe he was hired or bought as an Eved where he would support himself and would pay for his own mizonot? It's not a common case. And that's basically Tosafot's basic answer is lo shchicha. The cases where an Eved Kohen, after being freed, will go and pretend to be a Kohen and try to collect Shuma is not such a common case. Since it's not a common case, we're not going to worry about that. We won't not distribute truma to an Eved Kohen just because of that. And that's what Tosafot makes clear over here, that there are other instances where we do worry about it. Again, a divorcee, a woman collecting at the Goren without her husband. We don't let her do that because one day she might be divorced. And when she's divorced, then she'll come back and collect. Again, in all those cases, that's more shchiach. In that case, the woman, there's no detriment to the woman to go collect. She doesn't get a shame of anything when she goes back and collects truma. She's worse off being a grusha than collecting the truma. So in those cases, there are incentive or there is a possibility she'll go back and these mitigating factors don't exist. There we do worry about the fact that she might cheat to get the truma. But over here by an Eved, there's not a lot of reason for him to cheat to get the Truma, because there's too much negativity that would come out of it, or there's a chait that he has to do that's not to his benefit. Because of that, we don't worry about that in general. Nevertheless, over here we do worry about it, because he's testifying about something he saw when he was a katan. The fact that he was testifying about something that he saw when he was a katan, maybe he wasn't so careful about distinguishing between a kohen and an Eved kohen. Now, even though, again, there's no difference whether he's a kohen or Eved kohen, he's entitled to truma. There is an afkamina in the long run, which is if he's nishtachrer, if he's freed afterwards, what is the status or his ability to collect the truma? So again, even though we normally don't worry about that, as Tosafot says, over here we will worry about that issue. All right, litbol echol b'truma. So the Gemara answers here, we're talking about truma d'rabanan. Since it's truma d'rabanan, therefore he can testify about it. Now, she'acholek imanu ala gorin. He used to divide up with us truma at the gorin. V'doma eved kohen hu. Maybe the reason he was distributing or getting divided up at the gorin was because he was an eved kohen. So it's the Tanan Kaman Damar. This makes sounds like the Mishnah, based on the opinion, in Chokim Truma LeEved Elim Kein Rabo Imo. That you're not allowed to distribute Truma to an Eved except if his master's with him. Titania, we have a Braita. In Chokim Truma LeEved Elim Kein Rabo Imo. You're not allowed to distribute Truma to an Eved unless his master's with him. The context, we saw this in the Gemara and Yevamot together. The context of this situation is a case where two babies got mixed up. It was a Kohen's child, and the Eved of the Kohen's child, they got mixed up. So, Mimon of Shach, they're allowed to eat Truma as long as they are Ktanim, because either he's an Eved, or he is a master. The problem is that once they grow up, now they have two individuals. One individual owns the Eved. What do they do for each other? How do they solve the problem? So the Gemara over there says that they each free each other, they each release each other, and then they become B'nei Chorin, and then they can marry, because otherwise they have a problem with marriage. We're not sure if he's a Kohen or he's an Eved. Who's he going to marry? If he's an Eved and he wants to marry a Shivcha, if he's a Kohen, that's a problem. The other side, if he said he's a Kohen, he can marry. If he's really an Eved, that's a problem for him to get married to some of these women. They're going to be posel to women. So therefore, the Gemara says that they free each other. Now, the Gemara says, well, if we allow them to go and collect Shuma, then people might think that they're a Kohen. So that's what the Brita is talking about. Ein Chokim Shuma LeEved Elim Kein Rabo Imo. They have to go together in order to collect the Truma according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we do not distribute Truma to an Eved unless his master is with him, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. We say, Omer, Yecholu Shomarim, Kohen Ani, Tnu Li Bishvil Atzmi. If he goes alone, he can say, listen, either I'm a Kohen and give it to me for me, I'm Eved Kohen Ani, Tnu Li Bishvil Rabbi. And if it's not, if I'm just an Eved, give it to me because of my master. Meaning that they don't have to go together. According to Rabbi Yehuda, both parties have to show up together so that the master and the Eved are there together. And then according to Rabbi Yossi, each individual can show up and ask for his truma. I'm either a Kohen or I'm an Eved Kohen. Either way, I should be entitled to get the truma here. The reason is because in Rabbi Yehuda's location, region, they used to, if someone collected truma, then he was then Malele Yuchasin. He was allowed to get married as if he was a Kohen. Therefore, we're not going to let an Eved show up with that as Rebbe, because the mistake could be made that he's a Kohen. If there's a mistake made, they're going to allow him to marry. Then, b'mkomosh Rabbi Yossi, lo yumalim mitruma lo yuchasin. In Rabbi Yossi's location or region, they did not allow you to upgrade from truma to yuchasin. Since we don't upgrade them to yuchasin, we're not going to worry about the fact that an Eved shows up and collects truma. Because anybody who comes to collect truma, we're not going to automatically assume they're a Kohen. It could be an Eved Kohen, could be a Kohen. Therefore, there is suspicion about it. Now, what Rabbi Yehuda mentioned over here is that ayu malim mitruma liyuchasin is only by truma d'oraita. We saw that earlier in the Masechta, that we only malim miyuchasin when we deal with truma d'oraita, not truma d'rabanan. That's why we allow the Kohanim from Bavel to continue to eat truma d'rabanan, because truma d'rabanan does not grant you the right to yuchasin. Only truma d'oraita would grant you that right. So Tosafot says, wait a minute, didn't we just say before our mission is talking about truma d'rabanan? So if we're talking about truma d'rabanan, how come we're talking about this machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? So Tosafot says, no, you misunderstood. When the Gemara here says truma d'rabanan, that's what we allow this Kohen to eat after we testify about him. But the Katan who's testifying about him in the Mishnah is testifying about truma d'oraita. He's saying that he split with us in the Goren in truma d'oraita. Now that testimony will only entitle him to truma d'rabanan. And that's the answer over here. When he goes and testifies about the Truma here, the Gemara's question is, oh, is he an Eved or is he the master? We don't know. We brought down this machloket about Yuchasin, not Yuchasin, but that's about Truma d'oraita. But that's right. The Katan is testifying that this guy collected Truma d'oraita with us. Now, once we know that information, you know what he's entitled to? Only Truma Derabanan. That's the difference. The Truma Derabanan is what his entitlement is after we get the testimony of the Katan. But as far as the Katan's testimony, he's testifying about both Truma Derabanan and Truma Deoraita. Tanya, we had this sugya in the Gemara in Yevamot. Amar Rabbi Elazar bir Rabbi Yosi miyamai lo yarti. He says, I never ever testified about a person eating Truma that would allow them then to get married or go be maled yuchasin. Pamarate yarti. One time I decided to testify. Velu evid the kuna al pi. And then that one time I was wrong and they were elevating an evid to the kuna based on that. Helu sakadatcha. You think they actually upgraded him to the yuchasin based on that? It's a reference to the chamor of Pinchas ben Yair, who refused to eat tevel. So over there, by behemah and tzadikim, he doesn't even get into trouble. Kodesh Baruch Hu protects the behemah. Tzadikim atzmam lo kosher kein. But certainly a tzadik himself, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi, is going to make a mistake and allow an eved to become a kohen. Ella, you have to amend it to say, bikshu la'alot eved the guna al pi. Says that they wanted to elevate an eved to the guna based on my testimony, but we were saved. It didn't happen. What happened here? Chazabatre the Rabbi Yossi. What did Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi get wrong? He saw the individual getting Truma in Rabbi Yossi's region. Vazavasi batre the Rabbi Yehuda. But then he testified in Rabbi Yehuda's region. So he testified based on Rabbi Yossi's region because in that region they allowed the Vadim to collect Truma because they were not Maled Yuchasin. Then he goes to Rabbi Yehuda's region and says, oh yeah, he was collecting Truma. In Rabbi Yehuda's region, when you say you're collecting Truma, that means you're Maled Yuchasin. So the mistake was that he testified about something he saw in one region and the other region. If you remember from the Gemara in Yevamot, we spoke about it there, the Rabbeinu Tam over there, you can see Tosfot references you to other places. He says, Rabbeinu Tam says that this din of Ein Takala Ba'al Yadam L'Tzadikim is only in cases of Achila. It's only in case where you're ingesting food. That's something very personal. That's an Isur that a person takes into their body. That's where Hashem protects them. Doesn't mean that Tzadikim don't make mistakes. We see plenty of mistakes throughout Shas. People make mistakes. So Rabbeinu Tam says it's uniquely has to do with issues of eating and eating Isur. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam eliminates this from the Girsa. He takes this out completely. He says it's not right here. In this case, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi was not dealing with eating. He's talking about me mala and eved to the kuna. Therefore, it shouldn't be here. Or Tosafot offers another alternative, which is maybe over here it does have to do with eating. Because if they're male eved the kuna, then he's going to be entitled to Truma and his household's going to be entitled to Truma. So there is a side effect of Isur Achila, and therefore maybe there is a din of Isur Achila over here, and therefore you could be goreset. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, who thinks that this issue of Ein Kodesh Baruch Hu may be Takala Yadam is unique to eating, and since it's not about eating, well, in this case we're not goreset in the sugya, and Tosfot speaks about this much more extensively in the Gemara in Yevamot. Alright, now, he said over here that Makom Azeh Aya Beta Pras, that this area was a Beta Pras. Now it's not clear what that means when he testifies that this area is a Beta Pras. What is the power of the Katan over here? When he becomes a Gadol, what is he testifying to? Saying that this is a Beta Pras and this area is not a Beta Pras? Or are you saying that this area is a Beta Pras? Big difference. One area at a time he's able to be Metaher, other areas. They thought this area was a Beta Pras. And he comes along and says, no, the Beta Pras only reached till here. Past that point is Tahor. So that means that he's empowered to be mitaher areas that we otherwise would have thought are tmeim. So that's one possibility about what he can testify about. Or the other possibility is that he can testify about areas that we thought were tahor, and he can come along and say, this is a beta pras. You can look at Tosfot. Tosfot says, makom is a beta pras v'lo yoter. That Tosfot says he has the ability to be mitaher areas that we otherwise thought were tmeim. The other Rishonim disagree and say that he can only be mitame areas, or at least be maleh chashash in areas that were tahor. But areas that we had a chashash of tumah, he can't come and be mitaher them. That's too much power. So again, that's a question about what is he actually testifying about. Is he talking about the limitations of Beta Pras or the existence of a Beta Pras? So that's a machloket in the Rishonim. So now, about that we say why, my taimo. What's the reason he's believed of Beta Pras? Because Beta Pras dirabanan. The din of Beta Pras is all midrabanan. This is a case, a Beta Pras. In this instance, there are different types of Beta Pras. We saw this in other Masechtot, that there are three different types of Beta Pras. The Mishnayot talk about it. The Beta Pras that we generally talk about in Shas is a Beta Pras is when they had a kever, grave, that was inside of a field, that got plowed over by accident. So the plow dragged the kever all over the place. Now when it dragged it, we assume that it drags up to Maloma Ana, which is up to 100 amot in each direction, because that's the nature of how long something, a plow will drag based on the depth of the plow. And in their day, that's how far materials got dragged. The assumption now is that the body or the skeleton that was there is no longer intact. Because the plow went over it, it destroyed the intact skeleton. Therefore, there's no more Tumata Oel. Tumata Oel doesn't exist because you will not get to the Shi'ur together. Amount of bone, skeleton, or whatever it is that you need to be together in order to be Tumata Oel, you will not have that anymore. Our Chashash now is Tumat Maga. You come into contact because contact with Tumah is even Etzim Kisse Ora. Even the size of a barley seed, you touch a bone, that's Metame Meit or Heset, if you move it. So one of those two things can still be plausible because even if the skeleton is broken up, you can come into contact with them. Now again, it's only a chashash that maybe a bone is there, maybe you stepped on a bone, and this is Tumah Birshut Rabim. This is Tumah Birshut Rabim. You would otherwise said it is Tahor. Now over here, it's a little bit more of a safek. We knew that there was Tumah there at one point. Number one. Number two is, this problem will exist forever. I mean, it's not going to go away just because we say, oh, Tumah Birshut Rabim Tahor. It's not a one-time incident. It's a permanent problem. And therefore, Chazal over here instituted that it is Tameh. But they also gave you the ability to get out of it, which is, Adamar of Yehuda Mashmuel, it's found in the Gemara Mesachim, person needs to get to his Korban of Pesach, and he has to avoid a Beit HaPras. What can you do? Now, the Chatfila, there are ways to clear a Beit HaPras. These are bidiyavad. If I need to get through a Beit HaPras, or I want to assume that it's, I want to show you that it's the Rabbanan, these are the ways to get out of it. That is Mepech Adam. You get down on your hands and knees and you blow on the ground to make sure that there are no bones that you see and nothing can move. And then you bolech, and then you go through it and you won't be tamei. If you have an area that was well worn, well walked, tahor, then it's tahor because any etzem kisora would have been crushed already and it won't be there anymore. Or anything that's loose that you could have shaken is already pounded down and you won't have tumat maga or heset anymore. My time, huh? Why is that? If shel etzem kisora, shaloni dash beregel. Because if there was an etzem kisora that was left, it would have been crushed underfoot and therefore you don't have to worry about it anymore if it's well worn. If you have a well worn path at that point in time, there'd be no etzem that's left at that point. But what you see from here is that we're dealing with a din derabanan. Since we're dealing with din derabanan, that's why he's believed in this case. Over here, they're saying this because tchumim are derabanan. The kula seems to be because of the difficulty of measuring tchum of Shabbat. It's not like today where it's easy to do. They can survey areas and they can figure out where tchum Shabbat was. Over there, we know from the Gemara and Erevin how difficult a process it was to measure tchum Shabbat. So in order to avoid that issue or that problem, having to measure again, we're going to believe him that he says, Arkan, Tchum Shabbat. Because it's a din derabanan, we believe him in that instance. And again, here the Ava Machlokas, Rabbi Kiva believes Tchumim are de'oraita. So obviously, according to Rabbi Kiva, this individual would not be believed because then we're dealing with an issue de'oraita. He's not believed in monetary matters to grant someone an easement to cross through that property. My time, afuke mamono lo mafkinan. We don't allow him to testify to allow monetary matters to train people to have issues in terms of monetary matters. Tanu banan. The manatini mokdamar kachamar li abo. Tzinok is believed to say that my father told me, mishpacha zu teora, mishpacha zu tmeya. This family is tahor. This family is tamei. Mar says, Torah tmeya, sakadatko. What does a family have to do with tamei and tahor? Tamei and tahor are issues of tuma and tara. They're not issues of families. Families are not tameim and tahorim. Mishpacha zu ksheira, mishpacha zu psula. So a person is believed to say that this family was a ksheira, this family is a psula. Again, over here, it's not clear what his believability is. Is his believability, because even if he had a single aid, what can a single aid do and say about mishpacha ksheira, mishpacha psula? So there are questions here, whether his believability over here is that there was already a chashash that existed, that one of these two families is psula, and all he's doing is being machria. He's saying, no, this one's the kosher one, and this one is the pasul one. That's one possibility. Or is the possibility is that he has the ability to be malech chashash, that he can say, look, this, as far as the family is like shera, okay, it doesn't really matter what he says. But the family that's psula, he has the ability now for us to, or cause us to look into it more. Not that he can be posel them, but at least he can raise issues that we would now look into. Now, v'shachalnu b'ktsatsa shobat ploni leploni, and we ate from the ktsatsa when so-and-so got married to so-and-so. V'shayinu molichim chalam atano leploni kohen, and I used to deliver truma, chala, matano, to so-and-so the Kohen. Ayyadei atzmo. That's only if he himself did it. Avaloya de acher. Now, if my father sent with so-and-so, that doesn't work. If my father sent me to deliver it to the Kohen, then he's believed. V'kulan, im ayahu ed kochavim nidgayer, eved v'nishtachrer ina ne'emanim. In all these cases, if he was a non-Jew and converted, or he was an eved and was freed, he is not believed. And he's not believed to say that people had easements to use these properties for these purposes. Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha are ne'emanim. They are believed. Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, hi. And which section of the Braita is Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha speaking about? It's on that latter part about the monetary matters. Afuke mamono. There, we're trying to move money around. These have real implications in terms of ownership. Clearly, he's not going to disagree that a katan or somebody testifying what he saw when he was a kid, that should not have enough weight in order to move monetary matters around. El Aresha, it's going on the earlier part. That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha argues on and says, ne'emanim, they are believed. Even when he was a goy and then converted, or he was an eved and was freed, he's believed to say, when I was a goy, I remember. Or when I was an eved, I remember. But my kemiflige. What is the ikar machloket here? Tanakama sarah came in dovei kochavim olo chava daik. A person only pays attention to things that are relevant to him. So when a person is a kid and they're Jewish, these are issues or matters that matter. Since they do, he will pay attention to them and he remembers them. And dovei kochavim tchum shabbat. I mean, these items have no bearing to him. They have no meaning to him. So why would he ever think about these items? Why would he even have any reason to consider these items and have any memory of these items? Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha savar kevin d'date li'gure, since he intends to convert, meidak avadayik. He starts to pay attention. He starts to look at these things. So now here, there are two things to discuss. One is, the Gemara only talks about a machloket about oved kochavim. The Gemara leaves out eved completely. Now, either because eved is subsumed under oved kochavim, because we know an eved means an eved knani, and he's also the same as an oved kochavim, or maybe, because eved is completely different. By Eved, you could argue that an Eved is chayav mitzvot ki isha, and therefore he does pay attention. He does look at these things, and therefore maybe can't say this is the ikar machloka between them. So the question about Eved is on the side here, but it's a questionable. Is he like an Oved Kochavim, or maybe he's different? He's more like a katan than an Oved Kochavim. That's one issue. Number two is, the other thing to note here is that when a person converts, we see that it's a process. It's not a simple, spontaneous thing that he converts. Person starts to convert, we assume that he's been thinking about it or he's been considering it for a long duration of time. Because that's part and parcel of the Gerirut process, that he's really been thinking about it over a long period of time. Therefore, he is able to testify about it because he was paying attention. He did have this in mind from a much earlier state. And of course, it has to be times, again, when it would be relevant, or he would have thought it to be relevant, that he was going to convert. Even though over here it's en biyado lasot, even over here it's not in his control whether he converts in the end or not, because Beit Din has to approve it. And even though Beit Din has to approve it, he assumes that if he's doing the right things, if he's going to get there, they're going to approve it, and therefore he does think about it from a much earlier time, or he pays attention from a much earlier time. Mike Tzatza, what is this Tzatza that the guy's testifying about? Tana Rabbanan. Ketzad Tzatza. What is the case of Tzatza? Echad min achim shenasa isha, shenu genet lo. One of the brothers in a family marries a woman who is inappropriate from him. That means whether she's a mamzeret, whether they're kohanim and he's marrying a gusha and chalutza, whatever it is that he's doing that's wrong, then what they used to do, bayim b'nei mishpacha, the family comes, u'mevin chavit m'laya peirot, they bring a barrel full of fruits, v'shovrim otan, they smash it b'emtza rechava, in the middle of the street, v'omrim, achenu beit Yisrael, shimu, listen, achenu ploni nasa isha she'enu genet lo, u'mit yarim anu shemi itarev zaro b'zareinu. And we are afraid that maybe his offspring will get mixed up with our offspring. Now that might be from two perspectives. One is that they'll think that they're pasul because he's pasul. Or from the perspective, we don't want his family to get married into other families. We're trying to protect everybody. Kulechem dugma ledorot. Take a sample for the generations. Shlo yitarev zaro bizareinu. So we won't have any of this mix up. Zoi ktsatsa. This is a ktsatsa that the tinok is believed about. So they used to take a kli cheres, they used to use something that was sweet, fruits, and things that were sweet, because kids, anytime you know that, they throw candy in shul, all the kids come running, they collect the candy. So over here, it's the equivalent. They were throwing, bringing a big barrel of candy out into the rechov, and they smash it there in order to get the kids involved. Why do they want the kids? They want a testimony ledorot, dugma ledorot. How do you do that? You get the kids involved. If you get the kids involved, that's something that's going to last for a long duration. People are going to know the information. It's not going to just be the adults. It's the kids. And that's the whole intention of it. The whole intention is to get the kids involved, and that's why he's believed to testify about the Ketzatzah in this instance because of that. All right. With that, we end the Perek. Adran Allah, Chayisha, Shinitarama.